Welcome to the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I'm Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law, where we specialise in succession law, civil disputes and litigation in Queensland. If you want to safeguard your assets, navigate estate planning with confidence, or resolve legal conflicts effectively, you're in the right place. Join me each week as we break down complex legal issues into clear, practical insights, helping you protect your legacy and find solutions with certainty. So let's dive in. Hello and welcome to the Vicar Law Podcast. I am your host, Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law. And today we have kind of finished our romantic relationship theme for October last week. And today I want to talk about testamentary trusts and how you set them up in your will, why you want to do them, and just how fantastic they are. So as I mentioned at the end of last week, I would say that 9 out of 10 wills I've done this year are wills that incorporate testamentary trusts. People absolutely love them for a number of reasons, but there are two main reasons that stand out to me. But what I want to first do is take you briefly through the mechanisms of a testamentary trust and what it actually means, because this is kind of confusing. So we've all heard of a trust. So a trust is its own entity whereby there are beneficiaries, so people who benefit from the trust. Then you have trustees of the trust, and those people control the day-to-day management of the trust and they have a lot of discretion, but their role is to really manage the trust and the assets within the trust for the best interests of the beneficiaries. And then you have the appointer, or sometimes is referred to as a principal, but in my testamentary trust, we refer to them as the appointer, who is the ultimate controller, and they can remove the trustee at any time. This is an optional role, but one that I usually build into my testamentary trusts for a number of reasons. Now, people sometimes say to me, oh, they're like, my beneficiaries aren't receiving assets. And that's correct. It's the trust that receives the assets. So the beneficiaries never own it. The trust owns the assets and then they receive the income. So the beneficiaries receive the income and the capital from the trust at the trustee's discretion. Okay. One misconception about testamentary trust is that it is created by the terms of your will, and the terms of your will being when you have died. So the literal wording is, at my death, I intend to create the following trust. That actually is not the correct, that's probably not the correct wording, but you understand what I mean. So it's only created after you have died by the mechanisms of your will. Your will is the trust deed. So the trust deed is the document which contains the terms which dictate how income is distributed, how capital is distributed, what the trustees can do, how you change trustees, remove them, how you change appointers, or remove appointers. Everything is within the trust deed, and that trust deed is within your will. So your will effectively becomes the trust deed. So that's the main kind of outline, I guess, of what a testamentary trust is. Now, there are a number of reasons that people go with a testamentary trust, and there are two main ones that I want to cover. But the other things that are really important is the income tax flexibility in it. So there are a lot of tax advantages. Now, I can't give taxation advice, but it is tax flexible in that you can really work with your accountant to ensure that income generated is kind of maximized in terms of things you can do tax-wise. It also gives you a little bit of control from the grave, you know, rule from the grave. And when I say that, I literally, the image in my head is like a hand popping out of a grave and, you know, like, you know, waving their hand saying, excuse me, you can't do that. So it does give you a little bit of that kind of ruling from the grave, because in your will, you get to dictate, you know, who controls it. And then we always do a letter of wishes beside it, which really says what your vision is, okay, of the trust. Now, in my experience, there is really two main reasons that people will go with a testamentary trust will. So reason number one is they have minor children. And this can be when they have minor children in a relationship, or they have minor children from previous relationships and they're no longer together with the other parent. So when parents are still together in their relationship, and we usually will set up a testamentary trust after both the parents have passed. So we'll create a trust. So all the assets, so let's say that the parents, you know, the testator and their spouse, they have passed away, and then all the assets filter into the testamentary trust. There are people, trusted adults. Sometimes I recommend, depending on circumstances, that the guardians become the trustee. And then we build in the kids to take over as a pointer at a certain age so that they can appoint themselves as trustee. So we kind of build it in. People like this idea because having a testamentary trust in this manner, you know, one of the main things you have to do is have accounting records. So it really does give a good oversight about what is happening in and out of the trust, you know, what is going on. When there are guardians as the trustees, and quite often I'll recommend they kind of do it with someone else, you have some checks and balances available for these minor beneficiaries as well. And then of course, there's some great taxation treatments in there as well. If you're leaving minor children, they get $22,000 a year tax-free distributions. And so that really can help with the taxation side of the testamentary trust. You can also really dictate when your children take over the trust in terms of financial maturity. And a lot of people will say to me, well, let's build in all the kids at X date, when they turn 30, when all of them turn 30, when the first person turns 30. And so it really creates a really awesome flexibility. So that's for when you have minors and you're in a relationship. For people that are no longer with the other parent of their child, what they love about it is that the other parent has absolutely no way to get their hands on anything within the testamentary trust and do not control it. So people love the idea that the trust is controlled by other people and not their ex-spouse, not the other partner. And that's really a protection side to making sure that that ex-spouse or that, you know, their legal guardian really doesn't have any say about the money that's coming out of that testamentary trust and what happens to those assets. So for people that have had a very bad relationship breakout, they really like that idea of doing that. So that's the two main reasons for me we'll do a testamentary trust when children's a minor, okay? And then the other really main reason for people to do a testamentary trust, and this really occurs when the children are older. And what I say to people generally is, you know, you're all kumbaya, I guess. And then when your children get older and they enter into relationships, you can get a little bit more nervous about their relationships. And so the testamentary trust absolutely creates an amazing way to protect the distribution of assets. So when we talk about the control of the asset, I have a great thing in my testamentary trust in that it's called a disqualification trigger. So if any of the trustees enter into a family relationship breakdown, and that's really defined as separating from a spouse, you know, not living together. So family relationship breakdown, bankruptcy proceedings, end up, you know, contravening the Corporations Act in some way, get a judgment order against them, become incapacitated, they are automatically removed as the trustee of the trust. And the idea is to remove the assets from the trust to make any suggestion that they are personally owned by the beneficiary, okay? So a really simple example is, let's say you have three children, Jane, John, and Don. And I'm just writing that now. I'm just writing those names down so I don't forget. Okay. So they're all trustees. They're like kind of like early 40s. They're all trustees of the one trust and they're all appointers of the trust. They're the beneficiaries, as are their children, grandchildren, etc. Because the way, and I should have mentioned this before in the mechanisms, the way it's set up, it's really a bloodline trust. Your children benefit, their children benefit, their children benefit. In Queensland, trusts now go for 125 years. So it's a whole new generation that's really benefiting from your testamentary trust. So let's say they're all trustees. Now, Jane, unfortunately, has separated from her spouse. Her spouse has moved out of the family home. At that point in time, Jane is excluded as the trustee. She's automatically disqualified. So she's removed. She remains a pointer and she has ultimate control, but she's removed as the trustee to remove any suggestion that those assets in the trust are assets for the family relationship pool. And what they do is really the court if they're looking at it. And this was confirmed in a federal court case last month, which I have just, the name of it has just escaped me. But in August, there was a judgment that handed down. And what you want the family court to look at is they look at the trust and they go, well, you know, Jane doesn't control the trust. She's a beneficiary, but so are her siblings, her children, her nieces and nephews. That's not an asset for the purposes of the family relationship breakdown. Sorry, for the purposes of the family relationship, and it's excluded from the assets of the family relationship pool. So you can imagine the alternate. So let's say Jane, John, and Don received $1 million each from their parents directly, okay? No testamentary trust and direct. And Jane got divorced 1 year later. That $1 million, whatever she received, is part of the assets of the family relationship pool and up for grabs from her ex-husband. So it really goes to show the protection that a testamentary trust can have. And there was a court case in the family court last month, which really solidified our understanding of that and why we do it. For people like me who carry on a business, you know, kind of like high risk occupation in terms of negligence, even though I would like to say not for me, but you know, people can make claims. It really makes sure that I don't own any assets. So if a claim's made against me or a court order is made against me, I am removed as trustee and those assets of the trust aren't recoverable in any court proceedings. So that's the protection mechanisms. And that's why people absolutely 100% love it. And really the number one reason I get instructions to do testamentary trust is around that protection mechanism. Now, a lot of people will say to me, oh, I don't know, you know, my kids really expect that they receive X from the estate. Firstly, I'd say, like, screw the kids, man. Like, this is your estate. You have worked hard for this money. You have made good choices to have this estate. And it's up to you how you want to distribute it in your will. And what I usually find is that once people speak to their children about the testamentary trust, why they want to do it, children are 100% on board. And I give a really nice example. I had a couple years ago and they had four kids that were all early 20s doing various things. And they had a family meeting and they talked about the testamentary trust and they explained, you know, why they were doing it, the protection benefits. And the kids absolutely loved it. And one of the things they absolutely loved was this idea that they working together, you know, everything, this trust, and people do like it for this reason. If they have one testamentary trust, it's really a matter of them working together, keeping together and really maximizing the estate for the benefit of all of them and for their children. Now, in circumstances where you have children that maybe don't get along, you can have multiple testamentary trusts in your will. And in fact, if they don't get along, I 100% recommend that you have multiple testamentary trusts. The only thing I will say is that we want to have at least, just as a general guide, $500,000 of assets being available for each testamentary trust. So it really sometimes does depend on the size of your estate. And when we do multiple TTs, we just build in backup trustees. So let's say in our Jane, John, and Don scenario, let's say that Jane has her own testamentary trust. John and Don might be her backup trustees that we build in so that if she does get disqualified, there's backups there automatically for her that really, again, assist in this notion of the assets being, you know, not part of her personal assets. So that gives kind of an overview of it. Other reasons that you might want to do a testamentary trust, it may be that one of your beneficiaries you feel aren't great at managing money. It's a good way for them to benefit, but have the protection mechanisms, have someone else control the funds. So that's a really another good reason for it to do it as well. So look, it to me, it's a no-brainer. My wills have testamentary trusts. I know at least my mother's will has a testamentary trust in it because to me, they're a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you want to create this absolute amazing legacy for your beneficiaries to benefit from your estate for multiple generations, to have the protection built in, to me, it just makes complete, absolute sense. So I hope that has given you a great overview of testamentary trusts, why I have them in my wills, why 9 out of 10 of my clients have testamentary trusts. And quite honestly, this is very much the spiel that I give clients. So congratulations, you've gotten my free spiel. But there are a few things to go through and we talk about some different kind of scenarios, but really it's such a fantastic legacy to leave for your beneficiaries. So if I have convinced you in this 15 minutes that it is your turn to get a will with a testamentary trust, you can hop on my website, www.vicarlaw.com.au, and we can get it going. So thank you so much for listening today. This is our last week of October, and next week in November, we are actually going to move on to a new topic of elder law, which is a really growing area of law that I want to touch on and that I'm finding, you know, people are coming to me more and more with these kind of elder law issues. So thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a great week and I'll speak to you next time. Bye. That's a wrap for this episode of the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I hope you found today's insights helpful in navigating your legal journey. If you're ready to take the next step in securing your legacy or finally dealing with your dispute, visit www.vicarlaw.com.au to book a free consultation with me, Lydia Vicar. You can also subscribe to our newsletter or find out more about today's topic. Your future begins now and we're here to guide you every step of the way. Until next time, I'm Lydia Vicar, signing off. The Vicar Podcast comprises general information and does not serve as a substitute for professional advice. Prior to making any legal decisions, individuals are advised to seek independent professional guidance and assess the suitability of this information for their own individual goals and objectives.